All right, so we are holding then on your test summit Aleph by the first two dots, six lines from the top. Okay, we brought a long braisa that dealt with a number of details about how Mi'ilah works. First, the braisa had darshined from the psukim when it says nefesh tisima imal, that nefesh means it applies equally whether the person is a commoner or a kohen gadol or a king, which now the Gemara is going to discuss why we need to be told that. Then it continues explaining that the word Mi'ilah, that's what we're going to see. But the point is, why do we need the Torah to be using the word nefesh for that? Wouldn't it be obvious that everybody is chayiv Mi'ilah? Then the Braisa had gone on to say that the word Mi'ilah means changing, and it gave two examples where we find that a sota exchanges her husband for somebody else, and she's mezana with somebody else. And a Mi'ilah el Shinri is the expression. And also we find that the Jewish people worshipping Avodah Zarah is described as Mi'ilah. So we said, however, when it comes to
Jewish people, is described as
the Jewish people, when they worship Avodah Zarah, is described as Mi'ilah. But we said, on the other hand, it's not quite the same, because with a Sota, you have this Hana without Gam. She has Hana from what she does, but there's no physical defect created that there wasn't before, because there's not even a change in her status as far as going from a Psula to a Ba'ula, because she was already a married woman. On the other hand, a Avodah Zarah is the other way around. There's this Gam without Hana. However, with Mi'ilah, we said it's Pagam, that you're creating a defect in the relationship between the Jewish people and Hashem. There's a Shinui, there's a change, but without there being Hanah. There's no specific Hanah from Avodah Zarah. So we said, however, Mi'ilah is not exactly like that. Mi'ilah, there's a number of criteria that need to apply to that apply to Mi'ilah, which ultimately we said, we learned that from a Gzera Shava, from Truma. When a Zor eats Truma, you have a number of things happen. He creates a Pagam because he's damaging the food that he ate. Meanwhile, he has Hana from it. The Pagam and the Hana are in exact...
When he eats the Truma.
The Kohen can't eat the Truma that the Zor ate, right? If a Zor takes the food of Truma and eat it, then the Kohen can't eat that food anymore, right?
The rest of Truma can.
The actual fruit that the person ate, the Kohen can't eat. That's a Pagam. He also had a Hana. The Pagam and the Hana are happening at the same time and in the same thing. It's detached from the ground, because Truma is detached from the ground. And it can happen through a Shliach, because you can designate Truma through a Shliach. So we said all those rules happen, but all those rules are true of Mi'ilah as well. We said, on the other hand, there was a difference between Mi'ilah and Truma, namely that with Truma, only the person himself eating Truma is Chayev, whereas with Mi'ilah, you can have one person eat some of it, and then he gives some of it to eat to another person, then it can combine together, and he's Chayev, and that it can combine together after a long period of time. And we said, the last thing we said was that even if a person takes money of Hekdesh and uses it for an actual carbon, it would also be Mi'ilah. So if a person took money, a bedek abayis, let's say, and used it to buy a carbon, or used it for his master shekel, or whatever, he would have committed mi'ilah thereby. Okay, so now let's analyze the braisa. Omamar, we said in the braisa, nefesh, we said the word nefesh means echad ha-yochid ve-echad ha-nosi ve-echad ha-mashuach u-mashma. We said that it means both a regular person and a nosi, a king, and the kohen mashiach, the anointed kohen gadol, all of them are included in the word nefesh. So the question is, shiyachol mai? And what would we think otherwise? Why would we think that a king or a kohen gadol should be potter from me'ilah? Pshita, nefesh ksiv, of course, it says nefesh, means everybody, yes. Yeah. So why do we need to be told? The answer is, yeah. Ma'u detema, you might have thought like this. We know the Torah says regarding the Shemana Mishcha, the Torah says that if a person puts the Shemana Mishcha v'asha yitin mimenu al zor, if a person places some of the Shemana Mishcha on the skin or hair or whatever of a zor, we learned in Christus that that's osur. We learned that the Shemana Mishcha is reserved only for the Kohen Gadol and the king and the Kalim of the Mishkan, and if you put any of it on a zor, then there's kores or a chatos involved, and also Mi'ilah. You would argue a high lav zorhu. Now you would argue that a kohen gadol or a king is not considered a zor relative to the shemana mishcha. Da imshach v'gabe, because after all he was anointed with the shemana mishcha. So therefore, maybe in that case, Ne'ilah wouldn't apply to him either. In other words, what we're saying is if a Zor takes some of the Shemana Mishkan and smears it on it, pours or smears it on his skin, he's chayev on two grounds. Number one, because he misused the Shemana Mishkan. That makes him chayev kares, mezir, and a chata supposed b'shoigig. Number two, he used something of hektish, which he wasn't supposed to use, and therefore he's chayev keren v'choymesh plus an osham from Ne'ilah. Now, in the case of a king and a kohen gadol, you could argue that they're not chayev for the Me'ilah, because after all, it's supposed to be placed on them. So therefore, you could argue maybe they're not chayev, so therefore, maybe in general, so the point is they're not considered a zor, and in fact, we learned in Chrysos that therefore, if a king or a kohen gadol were to take some of the Shemana Mishka and put it on their skin, they wouldn't necessarily be chayev, because they're not a zor relative to it, because they're entitled to use it. So even though they have already been anointed, and there's no particular purpose for them to put it on their skin now, but nevertheless, you can't call them a zor relative to it. The Rambam makes a distinction, we talked about there, between just pouring some on their skin versus rubbing it on their skin, but okay, without getting into that, the point is...
And when it was Navi tells someone going to be a king... And he anoints himself.
We learned actually in Chrysos that when a Navi appointed a king from a different Shevet, he didn't use the Shemana Mishka. He used instead Shemana Farsama in balsam oil, not the actual Shemana Mishka. The actual Shemana Mishka is reserved for kings from Beis David as well as Kohenim Gadolim.
So when is the descendant of David HaMelech, who was going to be anointed king.
So usually we said over there that actually descendants of David usually are not anointed because they usually inherit the kingship from their father. We said only if there's a machloikus. Like we had, for example, Adoniyahu was trying to claim the throne ahead of Shlomo. And then various other examples where there was a machloikus, then they had to anoint the king. But the point is, in other words, let's not talk about so much a king, because fine, a king maybe gets anointed, maybe not. But let's say the Kohen Gadol. Every Kohen Gadol, even if his father was a Kohen Gadol before him, has to get anointed with Shemana Mishka. So now, if he were to take the Shemana Mishka another time and pour it on his skin, he wouldn't be Chayev Kares for it, because he's not considered a Zor. You would think, therefore, he's not Chayev in Me'ilah either. And more generally, you would think that if he's not Chayev in Me'ilah in that, maybe he's not Chayev in Me'ilah in anything else.
Right.
Lav Zorhu, so he's not a Zor. Dehar Imshach Begadeh, because after all, he was anointed with it. Kamash Malon, that is what the Braisa wants to tell us by the word Nefesh, that nevertheless, Me'ilah does apply to him when he's using it when he's not supposed to. So he would be Chayev Me'ilah for this or for any other, because even though he's a king and even though he's a Kohen Gadol, because it's only for this particular purpose of Kares or Chatas that it doesn't apply. Then the Gemara continues, again, analyzing the Braisa. We said the Braisa had mentioned that the word Me'ilah is used in connection with a Soita and also in connection with worshipping of a Dezara. And we also said that there's a Zera Shava on the word Chet from Truma. Meaning, in other words, that in certain ways we're comparing it to Soita, in certain ways we're comparing it to Avodah Zara, and in certain ways we're comparing it to Truma, to derive what the Dinim of Me'ilah are. What does that mean? The Torah is making a hekesh, or zer shaver in the case of truma, between me'ilah on the one hand and soita, avodah zarah, and truma on the other hand. What do we learn from those hekeshim? L'soita, we learn from the comparison of me'ilah to soita, not really a hekesh, again, it's more of a zer shaver because you use the word me'ilah, but whatever. The comparison to soita is as follows. Da'af agab d'leit pogam. Even though there was no pgam, because again, when it comes to a soita, there's no pgam in the sense that, I mean, she's damaged her relationship with her husband, obviously, but that's an intangible thing. There's no tangible pgam.
She can never go back to him.
That's an intangible thing, though. As far as a tangible pgam, a pgam would be, for example, if, let's say, before she was a besula, and now she's not, that would be a pgam. But she's not. She was married to her husband before, and in fact, we learned way back... We'll get to Avodah Zarah in a second. Hold on. The point is that we learned in Sota, actually, that for her to be a Sota, it has to be that she already previously had relations with her husband. Mm-hmm. It's called Kodma Shrivas Baal Laboyo. One second. If, for example, she was only an Arusa, if she was only an Arusa, then the dinim of Sota do not apply to her. If she was alone with this guy, she's also to her husband, period. She never drinks the May Sota. Only a woman who had been married already and had relations with her husband, only she is eligible to drink Mei Soita. So therefore, in the
still have Misa though. Yeah.
If it was Mezid and it was Eidim Asura, of course she's Chayav Misa, and I rose there as well, right? But we're talking But as far as drinking Mei Sota, as far as having all the technicalities of the Sota, that does not apply to an Arusa. So therefore, by definition, there cannot be any Pagam when it comes to a Sota.
It could.
No.
In case,
no.
When the marriage was never consummated.
But if it wasn't consummated, then she can't be a Sota. Kodma Shchivas Baal LaBoyal. It has to be that her husband had relations with her first before the Boyal had relations with her. Otherwise it's not considered a Sota.
She was still an
Eshetish. She's still an Eshetish. She'd still be Chayiv Misa if it was Eidim Basra. And she's still also to her husband if it was Kinri Vestira. But drinking Mei Sota, she wouldn't. So therefore, this is an Upgam. So the comparison is that Me'ila can also take place when there's no Pagam. So what does that mean? Gabe Hekdesh Nami. The parallel when it comes to Hekdesh would be Nosna Tabas B'yoda Mala, would be the case, one of the cases that mentioned in the Mishnah. For example, if a woman puts on a golden ring that belongs to Hekdesh, there's no Pagam in it. The normal use of putting on a ring does not create a Pagam. Or even maybe it does, but it's not toast. It's an invisible pagam. You only notice it after a long time, et cetera, et cetera. So that's the comparison to Sota. Next, in what sense is there a comparison to Avodah Zarah? That would be Da'ad De'is Foshinui. That means what happens with Avodah Zarah? The person changes his status before he had a relationship with Hashem, and now Lahavdil, he has a relationship with Avodah Zarah. What's the comparison when it comes to Me'ila? Gabe Hektishnami, Ad Debikea Bekurdom, the Yifgum of Pogum, Shittimukabetta takes out. It's not really relevant over here. But by Hektish also, you have an example, for example, that a person takes an axe that belongs to Hektish and uses it to chop wood.
The Bika
that he chopped wood, the Kaudum, with an axe that belongs to Hektish. And in what sense is that a Shinui? So first of all, it's supposed to be used for malacha of Kodesh, right. And now instead he's using it for malacha of Chol. That's
right.
A shinui, like a person who was serving Hashem and now lahavdil is serving Avodah Zarah. So that's the comparison that you see in that case that also Me'ila applies to that. Tosfos learns a little bit differently that it means also that when it comes, that it means that the person is taking out the axe from the property of Hektish and bringing it into the property of non-Hektish. He's taking the axe, which was in the possession of Hektish, and taking it into his own possession and doing malacha with it. So that's shinui.
It could be non-Hektish, any types of non-Hektish.
That's fine. The fact of the matter is, the Pasuk uses the word ma'al when it comes to Avodah Zarah to teach us that there's that comparison. That it doesn't have to be, in other words, right. In other words, the point is, it didn't necessarily have to be hanah per se, just like there's no hanah per se in Avodah Zarah. Just the fact of taking it out from one rishus to another is enough to constitute me'ila. In fact, we mentioned yesterday that Tosfos discusses there are actually two different types of me'ila. There's one that involves hanah, and ofgam, and there's another one which involves just shinui rishus, that the person takes it out of the rishus of Hektish. That alone, Tosfos learns, makes it that he's committed me'ila, even if there was no hanah or no pgam.
Avodah Zarah does not bring hanah.
Well, I mean, it's a certain mental hanah or whatever, but it's not like you can put a dollar value on it. Hanah would be something that, in principle, you could put a dollar value on. Rashi mentioned in the Mishnah, for example, you could put a dollar value on the hanah of wearing a gold ring. How much would this woman be willing to pay to rent such a ring to be able to wear to her, to be able to wear to a simcha, let's say? So that's so far that's the comparison with Sota. Okay. So far that's the comparison to Sota. That's possible to commit Me'ila with only Hanor without a Pagam.
Right.
There's the comparison with Avodah Zarah. It's possible to commit Me'ila only with Shinui Rishus, without any Pagam, and according to Tosfos, without any Hanor either. Some of the Acharonim understand the Rambam to be saying that there's not really the two different kinds, that Shinui Rishus necessarily involves some kind of Hanor. Let's say, for example, we're going to talk about later on, let's say a person takes coins of Hektish and spends them on something Chol. Tosfos would take the view. It doesn't even matter whether there's Hanor or not. Just the fact that he took it out of the Rishus of Hektish is enough to be considered Me'ila, whereas the Rambam would learn, according to these Acharonim, that what it means is that, no, he spent the money on something he has Hanor. There's a monitor with a dollar value that you can place on how much he bought. And what's the comparison with Truma? Akshar Achmanu Truma. In what sense does the Torah compare Me'ila to Truma? means ma truma ki yoichol praplamazik. Just like by truma, the pasuk says when is a person chayev to pay the keren v'chaymish to the kohen for eating truma, is only if he eats it praplamazik, as opposed to if he was mazik the truma, then he does not pay the keren v'chaymish, then he just pays keren. Examples of mazik, first of all, obviously would be where he wastes the food, but another example would be, Tosfos mentions over here, that even if the food itself, is even if he actually ate the food, but he ate it, it was achila gasa. We've mentioned before the concept of achila gasa, where you have a person that's overeaten so much that like the sight of food is revolting for them. They can't eat another bite, basically. At that point, if he eats truma, he'd be considered a mazik, even though he actually ate it and it actually went into his, it actually went down his throat. Because you need to have it. It needs to be something that would normally be considered achila, and this is not considered achila. So yeah, it would be that, but a more obvious example would be, let's say, for example, that a person took food of truma and threw it in the trash or whatever. Okay, so therefore, when it says ki yoichal means the person is not chayav the keren b'choymash for truma if he was mazik the truma, gabe hekdesh nami, the same thing applies to hekdesh. Kol de bar achila, when is a person chayav for me'ila, when it involves something that could be eaten, only if it's something that he could eat. Ki mazik lay potter, but if instead he's mazik, that he wastes the food, or that he eats it achila gasa, then he would also be potter. From the dinim of me'ila, that is, by the way. You have this machlokas rishonim, whether he would actually be completely potter from paying hektish for the hedit. Do we say that the dinim of mazik only apply to a hedit, but not to hektish at all? Or do we say, no, and maybe only midrabbanan it applies? Or would we say, no, on a daraisa level it applies, he'll have to pay hektish like he would any other hedit, he'd have to pay the keren, but not the chomesh and not the osham.
And the chomesh, you wouldn't pay?
Because he's a mazik.
Because
he's a mazik, and that's what we're learning from Truma, that just like by Truma, you're not chayav keren v'chomish. If you're a mazik, the same thing by me. So that's right. Rav Shamshin Rafael Hirsch, by the way, makes an interesting point on that. He says, according to the opinions, which I believe is the halacha, that at least on a daraisa level, if a person is mazik hektish, then he doesn't have to pay. Rav Shamshin Rafael writes, there you have a huge proof that the Torah wasn't made up by the Kohenim or whatever. Otherwise, you know, it would be like in any other legal system, you know, you damage government property or, you know, temple property or whatever, you're much more chayev than you would for a hedyot. And here it's the other way around. The Torah says you're potter, or at least, you know, at worst, it's a, you're no worse off than if you damage.
Because
one way of looking at it is you potter because one way of looking at it is the whole din of no because the whole din of heck the whole din of hezek the pasuk says for example ki yigav shor ish as shor re'ehu, let's say it says when one person's ox gores another person's ox, re'ehu means not hektish. So again, you have some rishonim learn that fine, you are at least chayav to pay at least the keren because you know the fact is you owe hektish something, but not necessarily, but not the choymesh and not the korban or whatever.
Me'ila,
that's the thing. No, we're saying that me'ila means that there was one of the following involved. Either pgam, that you damaged the thing, and in the course of that had hana, as we said, that there has to be pgam and hana together, just like eating truma, or that there was shinu rishus, you took it out of the rishus of hektish and put it into the rishus of hedyet. Only then is there me'ila, but just mazik, taking food of hektish, for example, and then throwing it out, is not considered me'ila. That's what we're saying, that's the comparison to truma.
Thus,
Mishnah says, Ketza, Nosna Katlachol. The Mishnah had said an example. The expression Das Balabais Hepach Das Tora is in a shach in Yerodea, in Simon Aleph, I think. But the Rebbe used to quote that expression a lot. Das Balabais Hepach Das Tora, like, you know, you have the Balabatim come in with their ideas.
Like when you come to ask a shah of the hall.
Right.
Yeah, pastis is because they didn't want to make trade.
Yeah.
In the Rav said the trade, the Balabos come to ask a shayle. So Balabai, they possess trade because
okay. They
want to have it.
Okay, anyway, let's go on. Okay.
It's more than that.
Okay, whatever. Okay, anyway. Okay, let's go on. The Mishnah said, Ketzad Nosna Katlachol. The Mishnah had given an example. The Mishnah had given an example. Let's say that. Let's say, for example, that a woman takes a necklace, a golden necklace that belongs to Hektish and wears it. Now, that there's no pgam relevant because the normal use of a golden necklace does not involve a pgam, or if it is, it's an intangible pgam. But so therefore she's chayev as soon as she has the hana of a shava prutta, which again Rashi had explained in the Mishnah. How do you figure out the hana? You figure out how much would she be willing to pay to rent such a necklace to be able to rent or borrow or whatever such a necklace to be able to go to a simcha, let's say. Okay. Omelet of Kahana Rav Zvid, the Dava Lav Barf Kumihu. Do you mean to say that gold is not something that normally gets damaged with use?
Zahav.
Zahav is the Aramaic word for zahav. V'ha-dahav t'kalse d'nun l'hecha'ozel. Consider, for example, the gold jewelry of the daughter-in-law of Nun. Where did that go? Nun was a rich person in that time. The Pashtus, he was named after the father of Yeshua bin Nun. Yeah. So he was rich. He gave to his daughter-in-law when she got married. He gave her a nod and he gave her lots of gold and golden jewelry and whatever. And later on, they weighed it and didn't weigh exactly as much as before. So obviously, gold does wear out with use. So what do you mean? What do you mean that gold doesn't have a forgotten? Amale. So Rav Zvid answers, Dilma dava de ramian kalosichu. Maybe it's like the gold that your daughters in law wear. Shitamuk about this changes it a little bit. Okay, whatever. The point is that he says maybe what it is it went to the same place as the gold of your daughters in law. In other words, Rav Zvid tells Rav Kahana like this. You're wondering, you're saying that gold eventually does wear out. The answer is, if you take care of it, it doesn't wear out. But if you have, let's say, so Rav Zvid is telling Rav Kahana, your daughters-in-law, for example, what do they do with their gold jewelry? They're not always careful to put it away properly. They leave it lying around or whatever. So yes, after a while, bits break off of it. So the same way, Nun's daughters-in-law, fine, they're doing the same.
Gold is...
In and of itself, in other words, gold, if you take care of it, that's the point. In other words, if you take care of it, then it won't. But if you're careless with it, and like, so I'll tell you. So the Takonis Ezra, who was one of the Mephoshim on Amos Esther, says that it's hard to say that that's the meaning of this, among other things, because, first of all, it comes out, what kind of a statement is that Rav Zvid is telling Rav Kahana? It's almost like a Vak Lashon Hara. He's saying Lashon Hara about Rav Kahana's daughters, that they're careless with their gold jewelry. So he explains, the Rambam actually on Om Mishnah, explains that there's a difference between pure gold and non-pure gold. Usually you don't make jewelry or other things out of pure gold because it's too soft. Exactly. You usually alloy it with other metals. Well, pure gold does not lose any of its substance.
Pure gold?
Yeah, because it's pure gold. It doesn't it's a soft metal, but it's very impervious to any kind of it doesn't rust, it doesn't whatever. So therefore, so the Takanas Ezra learns based on the Rambam that the Gemara is making a distinction like this. The reason why our Mishnah is talking about, let's say, a pure gold ornament. So therefore, when you wear it, none of it goes missing because it's pure gold. None of it is going to rust away. As opposed to, for example, what about you asking about the gold jewelry of Nun's daughters-in-law, or and Rav Zvid answers, it's like the gold jewelry of Rav Kahana's daughters-in-law. What he means is, in other words, their jewelry is not pure gold; it's alloyed with some other metal. So therefore, some of that metal eventually, over time, rusts away or whatever, or corrodes away, and therefore, yes, it weighs less than it did before.
Pure gold
wears much faster. It wears, but if you're careless with it, but in other words,
anyway, so that's another
explanation. But oi, besides that, Rav Zvid says, here's another answer. Nihidla ika nano pogam la alter. Granted, what the Mishnah is saying is the moment you wear a golden necklace or whatever, it doesn't right away start losing any of its substance. Even if you're not going to make this distinction between whether you're careful with it or not, or whether it's pure gold or not, in the long run, yes, some of it is going to go missing. You're asking, how is it that Nun's daughters and more jewelry weighs less than it did before? Because we're talking about long term. We're talking about they got it 20 years ago, and now over 20 years, yeah, it's gradually worn down a little bit. Here we're talking in the Mishnah, short term.
One time thing versus all time.
Yes.
Immediately not, yeah.
So that's the point. So when our Mishnah says, for example, that wearing a gold necklace or drinking out of a gold cup, there's no problem, it means in the short term.
Okay,
then we said in the Mishnah, the Mishnah made a distinction, whether if a person has hanah from a live chattas, then we said that, he only committed ne'ilah if he made a pgam in it, because a live chattas has a monetary value. And therefore, the usual rule is when there's a pagam possible, when it's possible for it to lose monetary value, then ne'ilah only exists when the pagam was done. So therefore, over here, it has to be that he was purging it. So it would be, for example, let's say, if he cut off wool from it, for example, or if he rode on it and weakened it or whatever.
From what, a garment?
from an animal, as opposed to the Mishnah had said, once the animal is dead, then no pgam is possible because you can't be poded anyway. It has no, well, you can't be poded.
No, I mean, you could.
No, ain poden as a kodshim. Ain poden as a kodshim lachil on the klovim. If it died as kodshim, you can't be poded where the only thing you can do with it is feed it to the dog, as is true of nevela. Therefore, the only thing you can do with it is, therefore the only thing you can do with it is bury it, as we learned at the end of Tumura. Therefore, it's not nevela. Therefore, it doesn't have any monetary value to hektish, and therefore, Therefore, pgam is not relevant. The only thing would be when the person has hana of the value of a shava prota. So he takes off, like you said, a piece of the skin, let's say, which is worth a prota. Then he's committed me.
In the beginning, you learn that. In the beginning, you learn that. Said because it's not again, should not be made.
Hold on. Let's try to explain. When the chatos is alive, there is pagam possible with it, because the Gemara is going to ask like this. On the face of it, when you're going to bring the animal as a korban, there's no difference whether it has all its wool or only some of its wool, let's say. That's what Gemara is going to ask. You know what, let's learn the Gemara and then we'll clarify. So Gemara asks Mechti, let's consider. Iba behemoth tmima, are we talking about where the animal is tumim, where it's going to be brought to the korban, hainu kos shel zahav? Wouldn't it be for this purpose exactly like a gold cup? Because let's say, for example, so let's say it was a sheep and you cut off some of the wool. Or let's say it was a cow and you rode on it and weakened it. What's the difference? Either way, it's going to be brought to the korban. As far as hektish is concerned, there's no real difference whether it has all its wool or some of its wool, or whether it has 100% of its muscular strength or 99%. Either way, it's being brought to the korban. So shouldn't it be the equivalent of a gold cut? We should be looking at the value of the hana. Was the value of prota or not? We shouldn't be looking at the pgam. The answer is, Amar Rapapa balas muma skinim. So the answer is, Rapapa says that our Mishnah is talking about where the animal is a balas mum. So now, when it's a balas mum, you're going to be poyde. Once you can be poyde, then we can talk about there's a difference. How much is a person going to pay if it has all of its wool versus how much is a person going to pay if it has some of its wool? How much is a person going to pay if it has its full strength versus if it has less of its strength? No. The Mishnah didn't say anything. The Mishnah said the expression, hanena min achatos. And the Mishnah just
said,
it was designated as a chatos. Now it became a balas mum. Now it has the din of what happens to a chatos that becomes a balas mum. We sell it. And we poyed it. It has the kedusha of a chatos until you poyed it. You can't bring it as a chatos, but it still has the kedusha of a chatos. It has kedushas domim, and it still has a certain residual kedushas aguf. We talked about, for example, in tmura, it's possible to make a tmura with it. We said if it dies, it has to be buried. No, that's not different. The point is, in other words, our Mishnah, when it said hanena min achatas, we assume that we were talking about a chatas that is a tomim. Now we're saying, no, you're right. So there's three possibilities. If animal is a tomim, then you go according to hana, because pagam is not relevant. If it's a balmum, then you go according to pgam, because pgam is relevant. There it has a monetary value, which is going to change whether it has all its wool or not. And if it's dead, then you go back to your hana, because now no pgam is possible, so now you can't be put. No. We're not talking. You're thinking of mitzvah slav lahonis nitru. That means the act of doing a mitzvah is not considered a hana. So, for example, let's say a person takes, for example, we just passed through Rosh Hashanah, a person takes a shofar of Avodah Zarah, let's say, and blows it, it's not considered that he had hana from Avodah Zarah. It's mitzvah slav lahanis. We're not talking about that over here. Here we're talking that he used some of the wool or some of the something from the animal. What we're saying is, if the animal is a tumim, it doesn't matter, because the fact that it's missing some of its wool doesn't make any difference as far as it's kashrus for a korban. Therefore, we don't go according to pgam, we go strictly according to hana. Did he have hana of the value of a shavah prota, which would be in that case like a gold cup where there's no pgam, versus where it's a balmum, where then we go according to pgam, because now we have to talk about a monetary value. Now we have to put a dollar value on it. With all its wool, it will be worth X amount to somebody who wants to buy it off hektish. When it doesn't have all its wool, it's going to be worth less than that. That difference is the fact. It's not so obvious that we asked the question, and that was the answer, that the Mishnah has to be talking about a balas mum, because otherwise, when it comes to a tmima, there's no pgam relevant. That's the point. That's the point that Rapapa is telling us. Although, it's interesting, actually, the Ravid, so the Rambam brings this distinction in Halacha, the Ravid argues on the Rambam with it and says, where, first of all, where do you get such a distinction? So the Noisa Kalim said, apparently the Rambam must have had, the Ravid, I mean, must have had, this distinction between Tommen and Balmum. So Noisa Kalem and Rambam say apparently the Raivad must have had a different Gusa in our Gemara, because we have the distinction right here in front of us in the Gemara. But also the Raivad asks for a couple of logical, the Raivad asks a couple of logical questions on it as well. First of all, he says, so what if the animal is a Tommim? It could become a Balmum and then you can be Poydeh. So why should we say that when it's a Tommim, we shouldn't care about the Dam? The fact is, let's say you cut off some wool from the animal, but tomorrow the animal could become a Baal Mum, and then the fact that it's missing wool is relevant. It has a monetary value.
Yeah. But
it's not just a matter of suffix. So the person should say, yeah, but the fact of the matter is right now it's a Tommim, and therefore we go how it is right now. Another point that Ivan says is, let's say, for example, even that the skin of it has a monetary value. Even let's say you were talking about an oila. The whole thing is burnt on the mizbeach. The skin. No, that was a different matter. That was in connection with something else. But
the skin.
Yeah. So the skin goes to the kohenim.
Skin has value.
Yeah.
Which means this must be born in Titane. Said that meila must be something to lose when English. Like Rabbi Kiva, I remember what saying.
Okay, Rabbi Kiva had said.
Why the thing from meila is connect if you ever chosa. If you don't have a chosa, me, you didn't mean if you use something like this.
No, because
what's
we just,
the difference? Why must
okay.
have annoyed?
Because we said that we're learning from Sota, and we're learning from Avodah Zarah, and we're learning from Truma. We learn from Truma that there has to be Nene or Pogam. There has to be Nene or Pogam, and the Hanoah and the Pogam have to be in the same thing, and at the same time. That's what we're going to discuss that in the next Mishnah. But we learned in the Braisa that's how it is. Yeah. So therefore, so what about the skin? So the Noisa Kalem answer, that's fine, but the skin is not the skin of a carbon, of a chatas, an oil, or whatever. The point is that it goes to the kohenim. So why don't we say that then you're asking, I think, in connection with something else. But okay, anyway, the answer is it's still not considered. It's sort of an incidental, it's a side benefit. The carbon basically belongs to Hashem. Hashem gives certain parts of it, including the skin, to the kohenim. So therefore, we wouldn't say therefore that the fact that there's a pgam in the skin of a korban atomim should be considered to lessen its value, because not really considered, still not considered to have a monetary value. It's a gift that Hashem gives the kohenim. It's not a question of a mum. Okay, it's not a question of a mum. Fine. Mishnah says, Nene b'kabachatzi pruta. Suppose a person had hanah from hektish in the value of half a pruta, or pogam kachatzi pruta, and he created a pgam in hektish of a half a pruta. So Rashi gives an example. Let's say a person took a piece of clothing that belongs to hektish, wore it, where the wearing of it is worth only half a pruta, and let's say at the same time he ripped it a little bit, where now it's a half a pruta less in value.
He wore it and ripped it,
but the hana from the wearing is worth only half a pruta, and the decrease in value of the pagam is also only half a pruta. From hana and from gam, yeah. Or shenana b'shava pruta b'davar echad, the pogam b'shava pruta b'davar echad, or if he had hana from a full pruta with one thing of hektish, but then he pogam a shavah pruta b'davar achar, and then he made a pgam also of a shavah pruta in something else. So Rashi gives an example over here. Let's say, for example, that on the one hand he wore a piece of clothing where he wasn't poigim it, because we said in the beginning of the parak, we said, let's say, for example, a person wears a shirt. He's not necessarily poigim it right away by wearing it. An undershirt, yes, because it right away gets sweaty. A jacket, yes, because it right away starts collecting dust. But a shirt, an in-between garment, not necessarily. So he had a hana from that, let's say, with the value of a pruta. Meanwhile, he was poigim something else of shavah pruta. Let's say, for example, Rashi says he took a drink that belonged to hektish and poured it out, and he didn't have any hana from it. He was only poigim, he didn't have hana from the liquid that he poured out. Loimal, he hasn't committed me'ila, ad shiyahana b'shavah pruta, b'yifkin b'shavah pruta, b'davar echad. It has to be that the hana and the pagam are a shavah pruta, or each a shavah pruta, and they're both in the same thing. The Rambam, by the way, as we said yesterday, gives a different example of nana b'davar echad, or pogam b'davar echad, would be, for example, the Rambam says, let's say a person takes one item of clothing and rips off a piece of it, cuts off whatever a piece of it, to make a patch that he sews onto another piece of clothing. So now the pagam was in the first piece of clothing, and the hana is in the second one. So therefore, it's nana b'davar echad, or pogam b'davar echad. So therefore, he'd be potter from meal. It has to be, again, like we said, like eating truma, that the hana and the pagam happen with the same thing. And at the same time.
The same thing means
for example,
same. type of object, but
the actual object itself. So for example, in the first case of our Mishnah, to give Rashi's example where he wore the clothing and ripped it, it would have to be, let's say, if he wore it and the wearing of it was worth a prutza, because again, he would have paid a prutza to rent this piece of clothing, and for this amount of time, and he also ripped it such that now it's worth a prutza less than it was before, that's the nano pogam b'davra. Continues the Mishnah. Ein moyel acham moyel b'mukdashin. When it comes to karbanos, actually mukdashin means things that have kedushas haguf. There's no meila after meila. Ela behemo klei sharis bilvad. Only when it comes to animals and klei sharis. Meaning, in other words, like this. Moyel acham moyel would mean like this. Let's say, for example, we have money of hekdash. Let's say, for example, Reuven takes that money that belonged to Hekdesh and takes it for himself. That's Me'ilah. Then let's say... One second. Right, well, it is true that Me'ilah makes it not Hekdesh anymore. That's true. And we'll get to that later. But right now, we're focusing... Right, well, actually, it is related, yeah. So now that thing is not considered Hekdesh anymore. He owes Hekdesh, the Karen B'chomish and the Osham. But if the object itself is not Hekdesh anymore, therefore, if now Shimon comes and takes that money and then uses it, then Shimon has not committed Me'ilah.
Yes,
you have something that belongs to Hekdesh. Reuven took it from Hekdesh. Then Shimon took it from Reuven, let's say. Reuven has committed Me'ilah. Shimon has not. Because by the time it reached Shimon, it wasn't Hekdesh anymore.
What's the...
No, we're talking about the fact that Reuven took it out of the Rishus of Hekdesh that he committed Me'ilah. He has to pay the Karen B'chomish. Doesn't matter whether he paid or not. He already committed Me'ilah. We're not talking about whether he brought the Korban yet. So that was the example. That's what we mentioned in the Mishnah. For example, the woman wearing jewelry. So the Shittim Kabbatus explains that, let's say, we could be talking about she herself as a gizbar, so therefore she has items of Hekdesh in her possession because she's entitled to, and therefore, and then she goes and uses it. Apparently, if one's a Shittim Kabbatus, she could. Why not? I don't know.
Why yet?
Why not?
So basically, by her putting it
look on the dollar bills sometimes, you know, you have a secretary, there's a signature of the Secretary of the Treasury over there, you know. I know, Lavda, but fine, you know.
By her putting it on,
well, so if what happened, Me'ilah, remember, is B'shoigim. So it would have to be either, for Me'ilah to be B'shoigig, it either has to be, for example, it could be you didn't know that this belonged to Hekdesh. That's a typical example, actually. You didn't know that this belonged to Hekdesh. So let's say, for example, yeah, she's a gizbar, a gizbaris, whatever would be the feminine form. So she has this necklace in her possession because, let's say, she was looking for a buyer for it, somebody to buy it off Hekdesh. Meanwhile, she forgot that it belongs to Hekdesh and she wore it herself. She's committed Me'ilah. Yeah. Okay.
The next person
who wears that necklace has not committed Me'ilah. That's the point. Ein moyel acham moyel. Ela behemo klei sharis bilvad, with the exception of animals and klei sharis. Ketzad, what does that mean? Rochav agave behema. Suppose, for example, a person takes an animal of kodshim and rides on it. Or bachaveri v'rochav. Then a second person rides on the same animal. The first person has committed Me'ilah. Then the second one came and wrote on it. Then the third person wrote on it. Kulan Malu, all of them committed Me'ilah. Because the difference is, Rashi explains that these things are not, they don't have only Kedushas Damim, they have Kedushas Haguf. And again, even if you can argue that riding on the animal weakens it, because it does, the fact is, as we said at the bottom of Amud Aleph, as far as its fitness for a korban, it doesn't make a difference. It's still perfectly kosher for a korban, whether it has 100% of its strength or not. Therefore, it still retains its kedusha. When it comes, let's say, for example, to money or an axe or whatever, or the different other things that we mentioned before, then we said they don't have kedushas haguf, they only have kedushas damim. Some of them, such as an axe, Me'ilah is relevant to. So behemoth of Karbanos and clay shares, Me'ilah is relevant even when each person does it after the other, because they still keep their kedusha from before. The Rambam actually has a whole different understanding of this. The Rambam understands that behema means in general animals, whether we're talking about animals of korbanos or animals of bedek abayis, and klei sharis, he explains, means more generally tools, not just the kalim of the bais hamikdash. Okay, how exactly we understand that Rambam is a big point of discussion among the notes of kalim over there. All right. Anyway. Another example, suppose a person took a gold cup of the, that's used as one of the kalim of the Bais HaMikdash, and he drank from it, and then another person came and drank from it, and a third person comes and drinks from it. Again, kolan malu, all of them have committed me'ilah, because, again, it's one of the clay shares, it's one of the clay shares, and it has yoshes haguf, and pgima is not relevant, because, again, it's still usable as a clay shares, even if it's a pgam. Well, that's the point. Usually, drinking from it doesn't create a pgam, but even if there was, Rashi says over here, the fact that it has yoshes haguf, it's not meant to be nifka. It's not something that's meant to be redeemed from hektish, because it's being used as an actual klisharis.
The
sefer
Torah that they use, that something that's considered klisharis?
I have no idea. Right, so maybe not. The one wasn't used for the avodah per se, so I don't know. Okay. Onward. Tolash min achatas, another example. Let's say one person pulled wool off of an animal of a chatas. Uvah chaver of a tolash. Another person goes and pulls wool off it. Uvah chaver of a tolash. And then a third person pulls wool off it. Also, kulan malu, All of them have committed me'ila. Well, because the difference is, in other words, we were saying that when it comes to, for example, riding on an animal, you were talking about similarly if they took wool off it. Again, the point is, wool off an animal does not make it less usable for a korban. Therefore, the same din applies. Therefore, because pagam is not relevant, because there's no dollar value that you can say that it had before as a korban, and now it has less of a dollar value as a korban because it doesn't have the wool. Therefore, you only go according to Hana, and therefore you say it still has the same purity that group as before, and therefore each person individually has committed me. It's a good question. I don't know.
The question is,
what's the difference? Why the Mishnah has to mention where they rode on the animal and where they pulled wool? Maybe the difference is that riding on the animal doesn't create an obvious pagan. As opposed to taking wool.
We just said now on this Mishnah, we're going to ask you for what Mi'ilah was and Mi'ilah.
Both of these are Mi'ilah. What we said is there's two types of Mi'ilah. There's Mi'ilah that involves Pgam and Hana, where there we have the rule of the first Mishnah in our Perek, that if it's something where Pgam happens in the normal course of use, then there has to be Pgam and Hana, otherwise just Hana. And then there's Mi'ilah of Shinui Rishus, which is taking it out of the Rishus of Hektish.
Can you add one to the other?
Well, so, what do you mean, can you add one to the other?
And
of course, it's possible to have. That person did Shinui Rishus and was probably going to get true.
Because why we don't get that you said that he mentioned before, so you pull off from here, but it's a time and you haven't been loyal, you have to take away
But you have to see, no, but you have Hana, because the hair itself is worth something. So you have to see, is the hair worth a purta?
Oh, it's
that's the Hana. In other words, that's the point. Where there is Pagam, then you have to have both Pagam and Hana. That's what our Mishnah said. It has to be that the Pagam and the Hana are in the same thing. But when there's no Pagam relevant, for example, an animal of a korban, where it doesn't matter whether it's missing some of its hair, that's when we say you look only at Hana. Did he have Hana of a Shava Purta? Then he committed Me'ilah. Okay. Tosfos mentions over here, by the way, Tosfos brings from a Tosefta that says, for example, that if different people use an axe that belongs to Hektish, then they all committed Me'ilah. Now, an axe is not clay shoreis on the face of it. So how do we say that there's Me'ilah or Me'ilah? So Tosfos learns either we're talking about an axe which is used as a clay shoreis.
For instance, to break the chapter.
For example, let's say maybe, well, I don't know if that would be considered a klisharis, because that's an indirect thing that you're using for the Bais HaMikdash. You're not, the wood itself has to be brought on the Mizbeach, but the axe itself is not necessarily a klisharis. Maybe a better example would be, let's say the axe is used, let's say, for example, it's not an axe exactly, but whatever, let's say a sharp tool that's used, let's say, for skinning the korbanos. That might be considered a klisharis, that would be considered a klisharis. On the other hand, the Rambam learns, as we said before, that klisharis means any kind of tool. So according to him, it's very straightforward. It means an axe of Hektish. The tool. Tosfos also talks about that what we could be talking about is that the first person used the axe and then gave it back to Hektish, and then the second person took it from Hektish again and used it and so forth. Then we would say that the Me'ilah applies over and over. Okay.
So in general,
the mission over here says Kli Sharis.
Or
Behemah, right. Rebbe, Kol Dabar She'ein Loy Pidyon. Rebbe says that anything which does not have Pidyon, or Rashi says Pgam actually, meaning that it doesn't become possible by having a pgam. Yesh, by moyol achamoyol, then moyol achamoyol applies to it. Now, it sounds like Rebbe is just restating the same rule as the Chachamim, because that's what we said. Behema and Klei Shardis, pgam is not relevant. Pidyon is not relevant unless they develop a mum. So what's the exact difference between Rebbe and the Chachamim? We'll see in the Gemara what the Nachamim
said.
The Chachamim said anything that has Kedushas HaGuf, namely Behema or Klei Shardis, and Rebbe is saying anything where pgam is not relevant, which is also something that has Kedushas HaGuf. So it sounds like the same thing. So we'll see in the Gemara what they argue about. Okay. So the Gemara starts off. Mani masnissin. When our Mishnah mentions that Behema and Klei Shardis are the exception, which Tana does that go according to? The answer is Reb Nechemi. The Tanya, as we learn in a Braisa, Ein Moyol Achamoyol Elo Behema Bovad. The Tanakama of this Braisa says that Moyol Achamoyol applies only to animals. So according to that Tana, we would say, if you have a bunch of different people ride on the animal or take wool off the animal or whatever, then each one committed Me'ilah. But if we said this is the second case where we had in the Mishnah, let's say where each person drank from the cup, the Tanakama would say that Me'ilah does not apply to that. Reb Nechemia says it applies to both Behema and Klei Shardis, so therefore our Mishnah goes like Reb Nechemia. My time at the Tanakama, why does the Tanakama hold that it applies only to Behema? Because he says like this, the Inyona de Behema, this concept, that where do we learn this concept that sometimes there can be Moyol HaMoyol? The context mentions the Behema. The pasuk says like this. The pasuk described nefesh kisim el mal, a person committed me'ilah and used some of the kodshim of Hashem, then they have to bring a korban. And the pasuk continues, the koyan should be mechafer for him with the ram of the osham. Now those words with the ram of the osham are extra. So the previous pasuk already said that he has to bring a ram. So what are these words adding? We're learning from that when it comes to a ram of an osham, or more generally, any animal of a korban, me'ilah, moyol, achamoyol will apply. In other words, what the pasuk is implying is that even after he committed me'ilah with that ram, listen, we haven't gotten to Reb Nechemia. Okay. We're going to explain Reb Nechemia in a second. The Tanakama is saying like this. Since the pasuk finishes off, continues, the eil ha'asham, that implies even if he committed me'ilah with that ayil, he took some wool off it, he rode on it, he did whatever with it, it still has the full kedusha of an asham, and therefore me'ilah would still apply to it. That's moyol achamoyol. So the Tanakama says it only mentions eil ha'asham, therefore it means only behemoth.
It means only
ale? No, once it says ale, then we know it means animal. Because you make a mamafinu from it, but the point, in fact, Tosfos says, the fact is, it didn't have to say el ha'osham at all, it could have said asher yichafer all of, so therefore it means, dafka, the el osham, only animals of osham or other korbanos, does moyol acham moyol apply, but not by cable. What about Reb Nechemia Amalach? What would Reb Nechemia answer? Why does he say it applies to cable as well? He says, kavachomer. Fine, you have the pasuk says be'el osham, but we can also apply a kavachomer. Im achere maybe lekushasan. If a kli shoris is able to be makadish other things, so what do you have? For example, you put blood into a kli shoris, it gets an extra level of kedusha. You put a mincha into a kli shoris, it gets an extra level of kedusha. So if it's able to do that even to other things, hu asma lekolshkan, how much more so that the keli itself should have the level of kedusha that you can have moyol achamoyol, that it still keeps its kedusha, even if me'ilah was done with it.
One's a living thing, one's not a living thing.
No, well, that's the point. Klisharis is not a living thing.
Right, but
fine, but he says, Behema we learn from the pasuk. Klisharis we learn from a kavachomer. He says,
if a klisharis can give kedusha
to other things that are put in it,
initially,
right,
like dam,
right, like dam or mincha or whatever, how much more so that it
has kedusha already,
right, that it should keep its kedusha even after me'ilah happens. Okay, so our Mishnah goes like Reb Nechemia. Okay, then we said in the Mishnah, Rebbe Omer Kol Dovah She'en LePidyon Yesh Chul. Rebbe had said the rule is that any time where Pidyon or Pgam is not relevant, then Me'ilah Acham and Moyol Acham Moyol applies, which means Kedusha Zaguf. So the question is, Ainu Tanakama. Isn't he saying the same thing as the Tanakama, just in different words? The answer is, Omer Rabbah Ikka Benayu Eisim. The argument between the Nafkamina, between Rebbe and the Chachamim, would be when it comes to wood that's being brought to the carbon. The Tanarabanon, namely, we learn in a Braisa, so what's the din when a person makes a neder to bring wood to the Bismillah? Ha'oimer ha'reolai eitzim, if a person says, we learned this in Menachos, if a person says, I obligate myself with a neder to bring wood as a carbon, first of all, lo yifchis b'shnei gzirin, he should not bring less than two pieces of wood. We learned this in Menachos. There is a concept where the Rashi brings over here from the Gemara there in Menachos that says there is definitely such a thing as donating wood by itself. That's called Korban Eitzim. We know from the Mishnayos and Tainus that there were 9 times a year when you had particular families would bring Korban Eitzim because they had a hereditary thing going back to the time of Ezra and Nehemiah, the beginning of the second Beit Mikdash. But a Yochid could also donate wood if he wants, called Korban Eitzim. So he has to bring not less than 2 pieces of wood, because every day 2 pieces of wood were placed on the Mizbeah besides Shnei Gzira Eitzim, we say in morning davening. They were what? An amma by an amma, and the thickness of I forget what the thickness is exactly. No, it isn't much thicker than that, no. An amma by an amma, and I think the thickness of the leg of a bed, maybe, or something. I don't remember exactly how thick it is. Well, I don't remember exactly what the thickness is, but whatever. There was a certain standard size to them. Yeah. An amma by an amma, yeah. Okay. Rebbe Omer, Eitzim Korban Hen. Rebbe says wood is actually considered a full-fledged korban. Therefore, t'unin melach, so you have to put salt on it, just like you would any other korban. Or t'unin t'nufa, and you have to wave it, or actually not need a t'nufa, but on the bottom it says over here it should be hagosha. You have to touch it to the corner of the mizbeach. A korban mincha, when you bring a korban mincha and you put it in the klisharis, one of the stages is you take it over, the kohen takes it over to the southwest corner of the mizbeach and touches the keli against the corner. So then you have to do that with a korban of wood also, says Rebbe.
Touches what keli?
The keli that the wood is inside, the same way as with the mincha. And Amar Rava, the Divrei Rebbe Eitzim to Unim Eitzim. Rava says, in fact, what it means is, according to Rebbe, if we consider Eitzim themselves to be a korban, it means when you're burning those wood on the Mizbeach, you would have to have other wood to burn them with. You don't just take those pieces up to the Mizbeach themselves and light them on fire. You would have to put them on a pile of wood, just like you put pieces of a korban or a korbanot of a mincha on a pile of wood. And the Amar Rapapa, and Rapapa says another point, the Divrei Rebbe Eitzim Tzrichim Kmitza. According to Rebbe, also, when you bring a korban of wood, you would have to do Kmitza. How do you do Kmitza? So Rashi describes over here, or Rashi doesn't describe in detail over here, but Rashi and Menachos describes in more detail. What you do is, you break up part of the wood into little pieces, into splinters, and then you take a Kmitza from that. With that said, we mentioned before, the Pirush Kadmon on
still keep its
kibusha. Yes, fascist, because it's meant to be burned on the mizbeach, like any other carbon. But like this, you have one part of it is made like you would with flour. You break that up into pieces, you take a kohen to it, and the rest of it is burned on the mizbeach. Or you have some rishonim that learn the rest of it is given out among the kohenim, like a chassos or whatever. Anyway, the point is actually now, we've mentioned before a mefurish, one of the pirushim on Me'ilah called Pirush Kadmon. It's printed in the back of the Gemara. It's an ancient pirush. We don't know who wrote it. But he gives a different explanation of what it means. Eitzim tzrichim kmitza. It means when a person brings a korban eitzim, he says it means he'd have to bring a regular korban mincha with it, and the korban mincha has a korban taken from it like any other mincha. Okay. Anyway, so according to Rebbe, when we say that wood is considered a korban, it means it has all the dinim of a korban. It needs wood itself to burn, and it needs the korban to settle. There's a sicha in Chelek Chavdeis for Parshas Vayikra where the Rebbe analyzes this machlokas. Why would we say that Eitzim are considered a full fledged korban? Why not? Besoy Chadvarim, the Rebbe talks about over there the idea of pnimiyas deinyanim, that when a person brings wood as a korban, it's like they're making it possible for other Jews to be able to bring their korbanos. So it's like, so to speak, a higher level of korban. Like they're not even bringing a korban for themselves; they're bringing a korban so that somebody else is able to bring a korban. So all of that is one explanation of what the machlokas between Rebbe and the Chachamim is in our Mishnah when we're talking about wood. So now again, when it comes to wood, Rebbe calls wood a korban. Therefore, it's like an animal of a korban. Dover shein by pegamin, it has kedushas haguf. Therefore, if a person were to use some of that wood, then there would be moil achamoil. So let's say, for example, even if he wasn't poygamit, let's say, for example, Rashi says, let's say a person sat on this piece of wood, and then somebody else came and sat on it, and so forth, each one committed me'ilah, according to Rebbe. Whereas according to the Chachamim, that we don't call wood a korban, it's only like kodesh bedek habayis, so therefore, pgam is relevant. Is it worth more or is it worth less? Sitting on it is not poygamit. Therefore, you'd have to look at, did they actually use some of it? Did they actually damage it a little bit? and therefore also in Moyle, like a Moyle. Therefore, if one person were to take them, if one person, let's say, were to take them out of the Rishus of Hekdesh, and then another person, and then another, let's say, for example, yeah, he sits on it, taking it out of the Rishus of, he takes it out of the Rishus of Hekdesh and sits on it, and another person sits on it, etc. No Moyle, like a Moyle. According to the Chacham.
Why yes and why not?
Because whether it's Kedushas Domim or Kedushas Aguf, Rebbe considers it a korban, therefore it has Kedushas Aguf. The Chachamim don't consider it a korban, therefore it doesn't have Kedushas Aguf. Yeah. Rapapa says another explanation. Kodshim is Be'ach Tzmimim, V'nasu Bali Mumin, V'ovu V'shochtan Ike B'nayu. The Nafkmina between Rebbe and the Chachamim would be, let's say you had an animal that was supposed to be used as a korban, but then it became a Bal Mum, and then he was over and shechted it without being koide first. Ikebenayu, that would be the argument between them. Vaha Tanya, and in fact, we learn in a Braisa that is the machlokes between them, because the Braisa says, Kodshim is Be'ach Tmimim. If you have Kodshim is Be'ach, that were originally Tomim, V'nasu Balim Mumim, then they became a Balmum, V'ova V'shachdan, and then he was over and shechted it without being poide from Hekdesh first. then Rebbe Omer Yukovru, Rebbe says you have to bury them, because he holds that they would have needed hamod of a harocha, as we learned in Gemara, in order to be poured to them from Hekdesh. You have to stand them up in front of the Kohen, and the Kohen has to evaluate them. Here you can't, because they're dead. Therefore, you can't be poured yet. Since you can't be poured yet, he says, there's moyel like a moyel. The Chachamim say you can be poured to them, because now at this point, since they're Bali Momim, now they only have Kedushas Domim. So we don't say you need Hamod, the Chachamim hold, you don't need Hamod of HaRocha for that. Therefore, it's like any other Kedushas Domim, and there's no Moyel HaMoyel. With that said, though, Shichim Kubetis brings a different girsa over here that takes out the words over here of Avashachdan that we're just talking about. They were Tomim, and then they became a Balmum. So do we say that they're still considered to have Kedushas Aguf, or do we say that now at this point it's strictly Kedushas Domim?
That was a question.
So that's the argument between Rebbe and the Chachamim. So when Rebbe uses the expression that kol davar she'en like pidyon or she'en like pagam, so he would say a bal mum has pagam is relevant, pidyon is relevant because you could be poyed to them. Therefore, moyel hamoyel is not applicable. It's like any other kedushas domim. Whereas the chachamim would say it's behema. We said behema or klei shoris lovad. It's still a behema. Therefore, there is moyel hamoyel.
But they agree that it could be...
They agree that you can be poyed yet, of course, but they say that's not the key thing. They say the question is whether it had Kedushas Aguf, and it had Kedushas Aguf.
The carbon thing is, it has.
Well, it had, because when it was a Tomim, and even now, when it's a Balmum, it still has a certain degree of Kedushas Aguf. For example, even after you poyed it, you're never allowed to shear it, you're never allowed to work with it. We learned about this in Chordas.
Even
a person buys it from Hekdesh, yeah, he's poyed it. It becomes chulin for many purposes. You're allowed to shecht it and eat it wherever you want, for example. But you still can't eat it, you still can't work with it, you still can't shear it, you can't use its milk, etc., etc. We learned in Chordas a number of names. Okay. Mishnah says, Notal even a kodesh al Hekdesh. If a person takes a stone or a beam belonging to Hekdesh, hareza loy moal. Just by taking it, he hasn't committed the evil. Now, not detached it. We're going to see in the Gemara what's the situation over here. Nosna v'chaver. Now, if he gives that stone or that beam to somebody else, who ma'al v'chaver le'mal? He committed Me'ilah because he took it out of the Rishus of Hekdesh and put it into Cholin, but his friend did not commit Me'ilah because, again, ein mo'il l'chaver. Once the first person committed Me'ilah, the second person can't be committing Me'ilah with it.
Except
Behemoth and Klesharis. Bono b'soich beisoi, if he took that stone or that beam, and the Gemara is going to explain, and we'll get to it in a second, but the Gemara is going to get to that the case over here is we're talking about the original person who took it was the Gizbar himself. So again, just the fact that he took it doesn't necessarily take it out of the Rishus of Hekdesh, because again, as a Gizbar, he has the right to have things of Hekdesh in his temporary possession while he's trying to find a buyer for them or something. So it's only, so just... No, not necessarily, no. He could conceivably take them home, for example. Yeah, apparently. So just the fact that he took it off site of Hekdesh is not necessarily Me'ilah. That's what we're saying. I raise a lemal. Once he gives it to somebody else, then he's taking it out of the Rishus of Hekdesh. So at that point, he's committing Me'ilah. So suppose he takes this stone or this beam and builds it into his house. He hasn't yet committed Me'ilah by building it in, and we'll see in the Gemara what we're talking about. until he lives under that stone or under that beam in the house to the value of a prota. In other words, you have to have hana. Well, in other words, the same thing.
Well,
it means, in other words, that the amount of time that he lived there is worth a prota. So if you figure, let's say, you know, the rent on this place, let's say, is 30 prutas a month. So he has to live there. There's 30 prutas a month, let's say. So he has to live there for one day in order to commit a mela, because then you have a prutas worth of use of it.
Second, it's covering his head and
had
a roof over his head.
No, he had a roof. We're going to deal with in the Gemara what the exact name is. Okay. Another case, I skipped a line. Not a pruta shel hekdesh. Another example, if a person takes a pruta that belongs to hekdesh, and again, we're talking about he himself is a gizbar, hareza leimal, so he hasn't yet committed me'ilah just by taking that pruta. Not a lachaber, because again, he being a gizbar is entitled to have the pruta in his possession. But once he gives it to somebody else, then he's committed me'ilah because he took it out of the rishos of hekdesh. The friend, the fact that it was in his possession was not yet me'ilah because he himself is a gizbar. Once he gives it to somebody else, now he's taking it out of the rishos of hekdesh, so he's committed me'ilah. But in moyel acha moyel, therefore the other guy is not committing.
Not coming to be himself.
What?
They're not going to belong to the gizbar after he took it.
He himself is a gizbo, so he's entitled
to... After he took him.
After he took it, it's not yet moiled, because it's still in the rishos of hekdesh.
After he took him, why somebody...
gave it to somebody else, that's when he committed meal, because then he took it out of the rishos of hekdesh. Now
it's never belonged to him, but gizbo.
I don't understand.
Even gizbo, they need to get...
Okay, I don't understand what you're asking. The gizbo is... What?
Gizbar gets some
schar. I understand if Gizbar gets paid by Hekdesh, but he can't pay himself. He has to, they give him a salary, whatever.
So if he gives this money to somebody.
If he gave it to somebody else, he wasn't entitled to do that. We're talking about he gave it to somebody else. We're talking about he's not using it to buy something for Hekdesh. He gave it to somebody else. He spent it on something for himself, or he gave it to somebody else as a present or whatever. Then yes, he's committing mela.
He's
not yet me'ilah, right? Nosnala balon, another example, what if he gives that prutah to a bathhouse attendant, even before he takes a bath in the bathhouse, ma'al, he's already committed me'ilah, shahu oimaloy, and the reason is, what do you mean, he hasn't had anah from it. The reason is because, at this point, the bathhouse attendant is telling him, harei amerchat pasuach lefanecha, look, the bathhouse is now open to you because you paid the prutah. He called it the rechot. So come in and bathe whenever you want to. So therefore, so in other words, in that sense, he has hana. Well, not only he has hana, but also, in other words, it means that Tosfos mentions over here a Gemara in Bava Metzia that says that what it means that you have a machlokes with Shlokish and Rabbi Yochanan on how exactly to understand this Mishnah. But the one way of looking at it is once he gave it to the bathhouse attendant, it's considered at this point that he rented the bathhouse. It's considered he rented it for a period of time to be able to take a bath over there, and that is irrevocable. The bathhouse attendant does not have the right to say to him later on, you know what, I don't want you to bathe over here. Take back your prutha. Unless they both agree, of course.
Why we go by the act and not by the kavana? If he had the kavana at some point in time to give it to the Bes Mechat, why we don't consider this me?
Because he didn't yet give it. What do you mean, kavana? He has to actually give it.
He has in mind.
No, if he has in mind to make it, that doesn't matter. Well, did he actually make it after? Did he put it out in such a place, Midrabbanan, and you have to in front of three people? That now, Midrabbanan, that's enough to make it hefker just to put it out, whatever. But if he made it hefker, then yeah.
So all
while
that's
okay.
Industrial shit,
anyway,
brothers,
yeah.
Not realizing that he's doing something wrong.
Right, all of this I'm talking about was Rishogi, right. So Tosfos mentions over here in this connection that according to Rabbi Yochanan's understanding over there, it would have to be that we're talking about that this bathhouse attendant was a goy. Because otherwise, if it's a Jew, you need Mashiach. So, an interesting point then is that Tosfos says, in that case, then in our Mishnah, when it says previously, Nosna l'chaveroi, it's talking about a fellow Jew. The word chaveroi usually means a Jew. As opposed to, Labalon could be a goyish bathhouse attendant. Although the Tiferet Yisrael asks that there are other places where it seems the word chaveri can refer to a goy as well.
The bathhouse itself, if it belongs to the goy, the whole bathhouse is matkona.
So the point is, in other words, because he's a goy, then what we say is, when a goy is kona b'mashicha. A goy is kona b'mashicha. So as soon as he was, according to Rabbi Yechanan, so as soon as he did mashicha on this coin, he now owns it. Therefore, in other words, so that's what the Mishnah is saying. He now owns it, and he's telling you can bathe whenever you want. Therefore, you've committed me'ilah at that point.
Okay.
The
Goy is kind of a Mashiach.
Huh? Yeah.
She means picking it up, right? Yid is kind of a Mashiach also, but Midaraisa, no, because Rabbi Yechanan holds that Midaraisa, Yid is kind of just by the exchange of money. It's only Midrabanan that you need Mashiach for a Jew.
Yeah, but the halacha is...
The halacha is like Rabbi, yeah, the halacha is Midrabanan, you need Mashiach. We're talking about Midaraisa.
Midaraisa, you don't need
Mashiach? Right. Midaraisa, all you need is Midar Torah Moritz Koin, it's according to Rabbi Yechanan. According to Rosh Lakish, Midaraisa, you need Mashiach.
How you put things, but you just by giving it or saying, I will give it?
No, you have to actually give it. So you know,
that's
Mashiach. No, Mashiach would mean, in other words, that he actually picked it up, as opposed to more, well, in the over here, you're talking about actually giving money anyway. But the point is, in other words, if let's say, for example, so if I'm selling you some fruit, midaraisa, once I give you the money, I've been kind of that fruit. It's now considered mine, even if I don't have it in my possession, even if I never did Mashiach or anything. But in Bava Metzia, it says over there that Rabbi Yechanan holds, we don't want to have the case of Nisrufu Chitecha Baalia. We don't want to have, for example, that later on a fire breaks out in your warehouse, and you say, well, you know, why should I bother saving the other guy's produce? It's not mine anymore anyway. So therefore, the Chachamim made a takana of Mashiach, that the guy who's buying it actually has to be Moshiach, and then it doesn't matter whether money was given yet. Once he did Mashiach, he was koiner that produce. But now, over here, we're talking about then, so on a deraisa level, according to Rabbi Yechanan, all you need between a Jew, between two Jews, is mois, and midrabanan, you need Mashiach. For a Jew to a goy, you need Mashiach, according to Rabbi Yechanan. So therefore, now that the goy was Moshiach, this coin, now it belongs to him.
So the halacha is like Rabbi
Yechanan? The halacha is like Rabbi Yechanan, yeah.
Okay. So between a yid and a yid, you don't need Mashiach.
On a deraisa level, on a derabanan level, you do. On a deraisa level, you don't need a Mashiach. Right. Okay. Yeah. Continues the Mishnah. Achilosa v'achilas chaveri. What happens if one person ate a half a prutah's worth and then he gave to another person who ate a half a prutah's worth? We learned this in the Gemara previously in the long braisa on Yud Ches Amud Beis. Now the Mishnah is mentioning it. Or the hana that he had of half a pruta and the hana that his friend had of half a pruta. So let's say, for example, a person took a pruta's worth of oil of hektish and smeared half of it on his skin and gave the other half to somebody else to smear on his skin. Or achilase v'hanoyas chaveri, or his eating a half a prota's worth and the hana of somebody else having a half a prota's worth. So for example, he took the oil, he ate half of it, he put in a salad or whatever, and he gave the other half to somebody else who smeared it on his skin, or Hana Yosef Achilas Chaveri, or the other way around, his Hana and the eating of the other person, Mitztayf and Zemzeh, they still combine together to make one Prutah and to make a Chiyuv HaMe'ilah, V'afilu L'zman Ruba, even if it was a long time between one and the other, as we learned in the Braisa.
And Hanoya.
So the Gemara asks, Maishnahu Maishnah Chaveri, the first case of our Mishnah, when we're saying that he took a stone or a beam of hektish, he didn't yet commit Me'ilah, only when he gave it to his friend, what's the difference? Maishnahu Maishnah Chaveri, why when he took it was it not yet Me'ilah, and only when he gives it to the friend does it become Me'ilah? He took it out of hektish to begin with.
Well, we said he didn't.
The answer is, Amar Shmuel beGizbar HaMasuris LeYaskin. And the Shmuel answers, we're talking about a Gizbar who was in charge of these stones or beams. Somebody's not a Gizbar. Indeed, as soon as he takes it off the property of hektish, then he would have committed Me'ilah. Yeah.
Okay. He didn't make a Rishus, not a Shus.
Basically, yeah. Because it'd be right, because he being a Gizbar, it's still in his Rishus. He being a Gizbar is entitled to have these stones or beams in his possession at any given time.
Why?
Because he's a Gizbar. It's his responsibility to see to it that there's that.
Home.
It could be in his home if that's a safer place to keep it, for example. Or if they need temporary off-site storage, they don't have room to store it in the business.
Well, those conditions.
No, but then what? But in general, you have, because he's a Gizbar, then therefore it's considered Yodrei Ki Yad Hektish. He is considered to that extent an extension of Hektish. Mind you, by the way, we learned earlier in the Masechta that usually when they built in the Bis Mikdash, we said they wouldn't be Makdash, the stones and the beams to begin with, because we said there's a potential problem in Me'ilah that they might sit on them or lean on them or whatever. However, we could be talking about, first of all, the Gemara mentioned over there, that there could be L'yoyma, where they bought them intending to use them on the same day, so therefore they could be Makdash them to begin with. So that would be one example. Another example could be, let's say, it was a stone that was built into this mikdash and then fell out, let's say, and now they have to put it back in, but meanwhile the gizbo takes it home or takes it into his possession or whatever for safekeeping until they can get repairmen to put it back, let's say. So now, again, him having it in his house, it is not in and of itself Me'ilah yet, because he's a gizbo. Only if he gives it to somebody else, only then has Me'ilah been committed.
the fact that it left the base of Midrash and went to a different
place.
Yeah, out of
right. You know what? Think of it, Lahavdil, like, for example, you have nowadays, people take work home, right? Like you have, for example, you know, people work in offices, but they also sometimes work from home, right? And they take company equipment with them or whatever home. They're not stealing from the company because they have permission. They have permission. The hero says it. Yes, it's part of their job. The hero also, it's in a similar way, the gizmo is able to take company property home because, you know, he's working on it at home.
Yeah, except if the company's got to go.
No, it depends. I mean, they need security protocols or whatever. Yeah, it's a similar idea.
Sometimes the company told them, take him home.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Okay. So we'll continue and finish the parrot tomorrow, Rosh Hashem.